ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the sixth canto, chapter 17. And this is Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. And we're on text number 6 and 7. Okay, great. And 7's on the board. So I'll chant the first verse. Chitraketur uvacha esha loka guru sakshat dharmam bhakta sarirainam astamukkaya sabayambai mitunai buya baryaya. And then text number 7. Jata daras tivra tapa Brahmavadi Sabha Pati Ankirkritya Striyam Chaste Gata Ri Prakrito Yata Jata Darasti Vratapa Brahmavadi Sabhapati Ankikritya Striyam Chaste Gatahri Prakrito Yata Jatadarasti Vratapa Brahmavadi Sabhapati Ankirkritya Striyam Chaste Gatahri Prakrito Yataha. Vaishnavis. Chatadara, keeping matted locks of hair. Tivratapaha, highly elevated due to undergoing fierce austerities and penances. Brahmavadi, of strict followers of the Vedic principles. Sabhapati, the president of an assembly. Ankikritya, embracing. Striyam, a woman. cha and aste sits gatahrihi without shame. Prakrita, a person conditioned by material nature. Yata, just as. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So I'll read the first translation first. Chitraketu said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the general populace, is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. He enunciates the system of religion, yet how wonderful it is that he is embracing his wife, Parvati, in the midst of an assembly of great saintly persons. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. Purport. Chitraketu appreciated the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and therefore he remarked at how wonderful it is, or it was, that Lord Shiva was acting like an ordinary human being. He appreciated Lord Shiva's position, but when he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the midst of saintly persons and acting like a shameless, ordinary man, he was astonished. Srila Vishnuvath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that although Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva, he did not offend Lord Shiva like Daksha. Daksha considered Lord Shiva insignificant, but Chitraketu expressed his wonder at Lord Shiva's being situated in that way. Om Gyana Tamanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagatam Mayam Dadanti Svabhadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhishta Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Okay, so this is King Chitraketu in three verses. He's making some smart remarks. And I'll read the translations again. Chitraketu said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the general populace, is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. He enunciates the system of religion, yet how wonderful it is that he is embracing his wife, Parvati, in the midst of an assembly of great saintly persons. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of the Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. I'll just read the next verse. I'm not going to read the purport or anything, but just to give you an idea. Ordinary conditioned persons generally embrace their wives and enjoy their company in solitary places. How wonderful it is that Lord Mahadev, although a great master of austerity, is embracing his wife openly in the midst of an assembly of great saints. So, this is one of the beautiful stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is consisted of so many wonderful stories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees and their different relationships. So this is one of those pastimes of a devotee of Krishna, Chitraketu. We've been following him for several chapters. Actually, it started with the pastime of Lord Indra offends a spiritual master, and then how this demon Vitrasura was created. I think it was Tasta in this fire sacrifice. so that he can kill Indra because of his offense. And then they're wondering how this Vitrasura was such a great devotee. So then he narrated the pastime of Chitraketu's lamentation for his son, and then it went on and on how Narada Muni and Angira enlightened him, and how he received this mantra and he was able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he became so, you know, he became perfect. He was traveling the universe with senses that could not deteriorate. He had bodily strength. He was given an airplane that was personally given by Lord Vishnu. And he was traveling amongst the entire universe, enjoying with the beautiful personalities, beautiful women, men. And they were glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he was, you know, like this, enjoying throughout the world for many thousands of years, just going wherever he liked. But one time he just happened to, you know, come across Lord Shiva in this situation. And so there's so many different ways of describing this, but, you know, the point here is that we have to be very careful of what we say, because words are very powerful, actually. There are some quotes I found on this. One person said, "Handle them very carefully, for words have more power than atom bombs." So we can see what happened because of just these three verses. What happened to him? He was cursed to become a demon. And here's another point, because it's interesting in this chapter, as we go through the whole chapter, this whole incident is going to be looked at in different angles of vision, like why he said it, the purposes, and, you know, this and that. So it's very interesting. So here's one quote that kind of relates. "No man means all he says, and yet very few say all they mean. For words are slippery, and thought is viscous." So, actually, Chitraketu is described in this chapter how he was kind of joking, you know, like kind of how guys joke back and forth. You know, they say something to each other, and, you know, they don't really take offense, but they laugh and they say the same thing. You know, like Chitraketu's like said, you know, "Lord Shiva, you're just sitting on, you know, there in an assembly of great sages. You know, Narada Muni was there. The four Kumars were there. You know, even Bhrigu was there," as described. So, you know, he's just joking to him, saying, "Look at you sitting there with your wife on your lap." And then Lord Shiva could have said the same thing. "Look at you. You're traveling all over the universe. There's all these beautiful women. You know, what are you doing like that?" So just back and forth. They didn't take any offense. But because Lord Shiva's wife happened to be there when he was joking like that, of course she was there, she, because Prabhupada describes how the women's mentality and the men's mentality is different. There's different psychology. So she took it as an offense. Actually, Lord Shiva's the father, you know, of this entire world, and she's the mother of this entire material world. They're like our father and mother in a sense. So he shouldn't have criticized, you know, even though he was in a kind of a puffed up mentality, thinking he was great and, you know, favored by Lord Vishnu. "I was given this airplane and look at this position," and like that. So he was thinking he was a little puffed up and thinking he was a little better than Lord Shiva almost. And Parvati didn't like this. So she, as a mother, chastises a child for doing some wrongs. You know, she in the same way called Chitraketu her son and said, you know, "Just so you won't act like this again, I curse you to become a demon." So this is what happened to Chitraketu. But as we go on in the chapter, it's very interesting how Chitraketu was such a great devotee, actually. He's, you know, I guess he, I don't know if you can say he got his senses back, or, but he approached his mother. He called her mother, and he bowed before her with folded hands and said, "You know, I, whatever you said, and whatever's happened to me, this, whatever favorable or unfavorable, whatever, you know, enjoyable or whatever suffering, these are all due to, you know, the name. These are our fruitive activities, our own activities. So you're not to blame. I'm not to blame." And whatever you have cursed, I accept. And therefore, you know, whatever, you know, what I've said was not really wrong, but whatever you think is wrong, just forgive that. And he was explaining very nicely, philosophically, how Krishna is in control of everything. And everywhere we go, doesn't matter, there's misery anyway. We may think it's pleasurable, but it's not really. Like the analogy, if you land on a salt mine, you know, wherever there is, it's salty, right? So here in the mature world, wherever you are, it's miserable conditions. No matter if you're in the heavenly planets or in the hellish planets or, you know, earthly planets like that, it's all the same. It's all salty. There's suffering everywhere. So this is the position, and this is how, you know, Lord Chitraketu understood it. And then also, it's very interesting how when Chitraketu accepted the curse and left, Lord Shiva began to glorify King Chitraketu and explaining to him how, my dear beautiful wife, have you seen the power and the beauty, actually, of a devotee? He's kind of joking, actually, with her and saying that, actually, you know, you're very beautiful, but actually, King Chitraketu is even more beautiful than you because he's actually defeated you. Look at him, how humble he is. He accepted the curse. He didn't curse you back, even though he could have. And this is the glory of a devotee. And then he glorifies Chitraketu in so many different ways, and the devotees and how they're engaged in Krishna consciousness and how they're equal no matter what position they're in, whether heaven or hell, it's all the same for the devotee because wherever they go, they're always glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that. So this is the position that King Chitraketu found himself in just because he misspoke. And there's another quote that I found about this speaking. It's from Matthew, from the Bible. Jesus Christ said, "But I tell you that men will have to give account on the day of judgment for every careless word they have spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned." So this is what happened to King Chitraketu. So Lord Buddha says, "Whatever words we utter should be chosen with care, for people will hear them and be influenced by them for good or ill." So these are some nice quotes that, you know, how we can understand the lessons that we can learn in life. And we can even analyze in our own lives how if we'd said something, you know, how this tongue, this little piece of flesh, you know, can get us into so much trouble, you know, by saying the wrong thing at the wrong time to the wrong person, you know, in the wrong mood. So that's why we always have to keep ourselves in a very Krishna conscious position. And there's so many lessons in this pastime of King Chitraketu. So much power, so much subtlety, so many understandings of the psychology and things like that. In fact, it's so powerful that at the end of this chapter it says, whoever gets up early and chants this pastime of King Chitraketu, he will go back to Godhead without a doubt. This is how powerful it is. So these lessons that we're learning here, there's very subtle, and you just read and read and read. You can read the same chapter and over and over and over every day, every morning, and you could get so many new realizations and understandings about how we should act, how we should live, what we should say, what we should do. It talks about the devotees, about devotional service, you know. Just the fact that Chitraketu was traveling with all these women shows that no matter what position you're in, even a heavenly position among so many beautiful people, still, what do? They glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even if you're in a very hellish situation, Chitraketu becomes Vitrasura. He was always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, glorifying the Supreme Lord. And Krishna, it was Krishna's plan, because Krishna is more anxious for us to come back to Godhead than we are. So he's always looking for an arrangement to bring us back. And this is the situation that within the heart of Parvati, Krishna, you know, had her curse Chitraketu so that he could come back home soon. Because right after, you know, this last life of a Vritrasura, he came back home, back to Godhead. Very powerful. So it's nice how you see Krishna is working. This is all the displays and intertwining of how Krishna is actually making arrangements for his devotees and through all these situations. And they're real, whether it's a curse or it's a misfortune, we may think it that way. But it's actually Krishna's hand in everything. He's making all these arrangements to bring us closer to him, especially as a devotee. Because it says once you take up devotional service, actually there is no karma. But Krishna, he's making all these arrangements for you. They may seem like karma, but it's actually for your benefit. Just like King Chitraketu. And even Parvati, she made some awareness. Actually, after she cursed Chitraketu, she was, and Lord Shiva explained to her the power and the potency of this king. She was kind of like, you know, embarrassed to describe how she covered her face with her sari. So she was a little ashamed. So she actually, it's described that she actually came and her senses also, came to her senses and, you know, learned something from the situation. So there's so many things we can learn like this in this particular pastimes of Krishna consciousness. So there's a nice lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave. And he talks about this katha. You know, this is the, just by three verses, the words that he spoke affected him in a very adverse way, and how they can affect us in adverse ways. And also, we can see all the different chanting that was done by Chitraketu, how it affected him, how he's protected, and how even this Vritrasura, how he was protected. So Srila Prabhupada talks about this, and we'll end with this, about Lila Katha, how we should always be absorbed in this Lila Katha, and then we'll be protected. So Prahlad Maharaj, in the previous verse, he describes what is the position of this material world. Yasmat priya priya yoga viyoga, simply lamentation. Sometimes we are so-called happy by getting the desirable things, and mostly we are unhappy, associating with undesirable things. So in order to save ourselves from these opposing elements, the best thing is suggested. So, ham priyasya surida paradevataya lila katas. Let us be engaged in always chanting or reading the pastimes of the Lord, lila kata. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, then it is full of lila kata, the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So that is the only way to get out of the miserable condition of this mature world. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Trinadapi Sunichena, Turodapi Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sada Hari. This verse was quoted several times in this chapter about, you know, we have to develop this position. Chitraketu was not on this humble platform, but then he became on that platform. And we can see the result. Kirtaniya, this is Lila Katha. Lila Katha Kirtaniya. When you read or hear or chant about the pastimes of the Lord, that is also kirtan. And if you chant Hare Krishna mantra with instrument, that is also kirtan. There is no difference. So we must engage Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Either we should chant Hare Krishna mantra, or we should read our books. This is wanted. Then we'll be safe from Maya. Otherwise, at any time, we'll be victimized. So this is the perfection of this, of our words. And this is to use the words to chant this Lila Katha. And then we will be safe from Maya. So just see, for thousands and thousands and millions of years, Chitraketu is chanting the glories of the Lord, traveling all over the universe like that, and then finally, in just three verses, everything was changed. So this is, we'll be victimized. But of course, Krishna, this is all pastime, and, you know, for us to understand and learn so many lessons from this pastime, and also show how Krishna's hand is in everything, and how he is has our self-interest in mind. So thank you very much. Any comments or questions or realizations about this, these verses? Yes, Amala Bhakta. I like the way you narrate this chapter in your narrations, where you're laughing, you're actually laughing and imitating King Chitraketu about, yeah, on your tapes. Yeah, yeah. It's like, ha ha. And it's,
thanks. Nice. Thank you for your kind words. I was just about to offer some kind ones to you as well, and to thank you very much for a very insightful class, and also some very wonderful quotes that you made, which elaborate the points of the verse well. What I wanted to mention is a point that you brought out when you spoke, when you quoted from the Bible about speech, yeah. How you have to account for your speech at the end of your life. So that is a very important point, that what we say is so very important, and as you mentioned so clearly, that if we say the wrong thing, we say something offensive, so say something, say something disturbing or upsetting to someone unnecessarily, then this we have to account for that, and that Krishna does not like that. But here's another point, is that, and of course, if we, and this is not the point, if we speak very nicely and gently and warmly and considerately and thoughtfully concernedly for others, this is also taken into account, and we are rewarded for those. But there's a very important point in speaking, and that is what we say, especially when we are saying something to someone which may be commendatory or which may be laudatory or praiseworthy, it should be said sincerely. It should be said from the heart and not merely as a show. Or, for example, you commit a mistake or you commit an offense or you do something wrong and somebody is hurt by it, and you apologize for it, but you really don't feel that apology in your heart. You just say it because it looks very spiritual, and it gets the person to forgive you for what you've done. But in effect, you don't really feel anything in your heart, and basically, you go out and you do the same thing again to somebody else. Why? Because you just said it for the sake of looking very spiritual, not really feeling the pain or the suffering that you gave, and thereby, as a result, trying to relieve that suffering by apologizing and begging for that forgiveness, because you're feeling that pain as a result. So the main point is this, is that we should be sincere, as Prabhupada uses these two words, and serious as possible in all of our speaking, and not merely try to be either just parrots or merely try to be appear to be spiritual without really genuinely feeling spiritual feelings.
That's true. They say it's, there's another quote, I can't remember exactly, but it's similar to what you're saying, of how we shouldn't give sermons or preaching, somehow he's comparing our preaching and serving, but our actions is really what determines, is our real example, right? So how you're living, you know, how you are, the person, the character of the person, like you're saying, comes from his heart, that's the real preaching too. And then if that's there, then what we say will have an influence for good. Otherwise, it'll be for ill, as described. But there was one more, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that actually summarizes this whole thing about austerity of speech, you know, Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat swadhyaya vyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapa uchate. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, and that's what Kitrakato's words were not very pleasing at all. And that was why she was offended, Mother Parvati. They have to be truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. So this is Prabhupada's talking about the Lila Katha. You know, if we're just constantly chanting Hare Krishna, reading his books, kirtan, it's all Lila Katha. And that will protect us. Otherwise, as you said, we'll be victimized. Yes? Hold on, he's bringing the mic.
If I can wobble there.
Hare Krishna. You were just talking about how Srila Prabhupada said how words must be palatable and truthful and everything. But in that purport there, he said also that, you know, if a man's a thief, you can call him a thief. It's in the purport there.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
What? In the purport there of that verse, it says that when a man's a thief, you can call him a thief. That's not an offense. That's just speaking truth.
I don't know if it's this particular one. It might be another one. Because I'm looking at it here, it doesn't mention that, but he's talking about how a teacher can sometimes, you know, be harsh with his students. But truthfulness, he talks about that, truthfulness. You call a thief a thief. Okay. So any other comments, questions? Jai, thank you for your kind attention. All glories to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Jai. First you start off laughing really like ha ha, look at Lord Shiva, and then you're like